But first, I interrupt this program for a commercial. If you don't whiz out and buy one of our lovely USB sticks, I'm not going to do the program. Simple as that. Make your choice. It's terrific. We've got Oliver Stone, we've got Tim Minchin, lots and lots of wonderful people on amongst the 20 interviews, and great present for Chrissy. Now, having done that, we're going to look at the very nasty clauses in the trade pact called the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That sounds very friendly. It covers everything from the price of pharmaceuticals to how much you'll be paying for your movies and the internet. Now, negotiations on the TPP are usually fairly secretive, but a few weeks ago, WikiLeaks released a draft version of the intellectual property chapter, unleashing a barrage of anti-TPP sentiment. WikiLeaks confirmed the worst nightmares of TPP's long-time critics: lack of transparency, the big concern that the current agreement gives significant legal power to corporations in both the entertainment and pharmaceutical industries. Joining me, Dr. Matthew Rimmer from the ANU College of Law, who's in our Canberra studio. And on the blower from Washington, D.C. is Susan Sell, Professor of Political Science at George Washington. Matthew, trade negotiations, 12 Asian Pacific countries, including Australia, they've been meeting in Salt Lake City, Utah, over the weekend. Will they be popping the Bollinger corks before Christmas?
Well, at the moment, the United States Trade Representative has been kind of engaging in a high-pressure sell to the other countries to try to accept some of their proposals in relation to intellectual property and medicines. However, the Obama administration seems under attack from multiple fronts. So WikiLeaks has released the draft text of the intellectual property chapter. 151 Democrats in the United States Congress have said that they're going to oppose Obama getting a fast-track authority. And a number of Republicans have also expressed concerns about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So Obama will have his work cut out with such opposition, and trying to get consensus on such a huge agreement covering 29 chapters and 12 different countries.
Susan, what's the latest on the talks in Salt Lake City?
Well, the latest that I've heard is that the USTR is using high-pressure tactics to extend the talks and make sure that some of the people that should be there aren't there. Some Australian reporters have been reporting from Salt Lake City, and some of the delegations have only maybe one representative, whereas the U.S. has many, and they have to try to cover a variety of issues. And so there's some kind of strategic pressure to make sure that some people that might be opposing it aren't there or aren't able to express their displeasure because they're just stretched so thin.
Matthew, are the Australian reps there hard-nosed, good gutter fighters?
Well, the leaks...
Or are they pussycats?
Well, the leaks from WikiLeaks suggested that, you know, Australia plays deputy sheriff to the United States. And, you know, statistically speaking, we side up with the United States most often, which is a bit kind of concerning. I mean,
that's a shocking thing to say. I've never noticed that in my long lifetime. We've always maintained a very energetic independence, but press on.
Other countries like New Zealand and Canada and some of the smaller countries like Malaysia and Brunei and Vietnam have been kind of pushing back against some of the heavy demands of the United States. But Australia has been very passive in the debate over the intellectual property chapter. And the new Abbott government has been very keen on doing business in terms of free trade agreements. So the new Minister for Trade and Investment, Andrew Robb, seems very keen on getting a Trans-Pacific Partnership concluded and kind of negotiating a good deal. However, they've come under some criticism for not necessarily taking into account concerns about IT pricing and drug pricing and the protection of public health.
Susan, I was telling the listener something that happened 30 years ago when I was involved in negotiating with the Hollywood studios for Australia and was having an open war with Jack Valenti. You're far too young to remember him. But I would have thought that the Hollywood studios now won't back down on wanting their wish list. What is it, essentially?
Well, they want extended copyright. For example, the United States is asking for copyright terms of life plus 95 years for corporate-owned copyright.
Wow.
Which is Disney wish list. The Berne Convention has 50 years, just to put it in perspective. So the U.S. is asking for 95 for corporate rights. They also want to get ISPs more involved in policing the Internet, and they want to reduce, and Australia and the United States are alone in opposing any kind of measures that would reduce ISP liability. So they would like to see the ISPs assume more liability for people posting infringing content. And so they want the ISPs to do their policing of their private rights. And there's a lot of opposition to that. Only the United States and Australia are saying they don't want these larger safe harbors for ISPs.
Matthew, an old friend of the programs and a friend of Julian Assange, Sulit Dreyfus, says that last week Michael Froman, a U.S. trade rep, took his son touring around a Paramount lot, the Paramount lot in Hollywood, visiting a soundstage, watching a movie, posing for happy snaps. But flowing on from that, why will the TPP make internet services more expensive?
Well, in Australia, there's been great scandals over IT pricing. So an Australian parliamentary committee this year handed down its report, which concluded that Australians were paying a so-called Australia tax. You know, big IT companies like Apple and Adobe and Microsoft were kind of charging premium prices for Australian consumers. And there's been a great deal of concern that the Trans-Pacific Partnership entrenches that problem. So one of the lead protagonists in the inquiry was Ed Husic, a Western Sydney ALP politician, and he was staggered, he said on Sky News, by the text of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And he was very concerned that the agreement reduced policy flexibilities for the Australian Parliament to take action against price gouging.
Susan, the Australian film industry, battered though it is these days, only exists because we had local content quotas for television and radio and and some buffer zoning on film. How will the TPP affect local content production quotas? Because, of course, Hollywood doesn't like them at all.
I'm not familiar with a provision that would eradicate those kind of limits, so I can't comment on that.
Okay, Matthew, how's the Australian government responding to what's been revealed in the leaked document?
Well, at estimates this week, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade defended the radical secrecy surrounding the agreement, and they maintained that the law was merely reflecting, or the treaty was merely reflecting existing law, and that it would be balanced. The Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade came under heavy questioning from the Greens, Senator Peter Whish-Wilson, who was very kind of concerned about the lack of transparency surrounding the agreement. Senator Penny Wong for the ALP raised a lot of concerns about the investment chapter. She seemed very concerned that state investor dispute clauses would be used to challenge forms of public regulation like plain packaging for tobacco products and measures to protect the environment and measures to protect labour rights. And the DLP, Senator Madigan, also kind of expressed concerns about the agreement.
Given that health policy is such a huge issue in the United States, Susan, one of the big concerns from TPP critics around the world is the issue of access to medicine, that signing the trade agreement will send prices up. Are they right?
Yes, they're right. And this is one of the things that was perhaps very most surprising to me, is how far the pharmaceutical industry wants to push in ways that would chill generic competition. And they have been battling India for some laws that India has to try to prevent evergreening of drugs, where you bring it out as a gel cap, then you bring it out as a capsule, then you bring it out as a tablet, but it's the same active ingredient and there's no new efficacy. This is called evergreening, where when your gel cap patent runs out, then you get a patent on the tablet, then you get a tablet, you know, patent on the liquid, and it just continues your patent and prevents generic competition from coming in. And they are including provisions that make evergreening very easy to do. And that is to extend patent life. They're also asking for new rights, not intellectual property rights, but they want to claim rights, exclusive rights in clinical trial data. And this is problematic because generic firms rely on clinical trial data to say, you know, that the brand name firm has done these clinical trials and they have to submit this evidence for regulatory approval of the drug. And then the generic firm can come in later as the patent's expiring and they have to prove bioequivalence of this drug and efficacy, but they can rely on that original test data that was submitted. The brand name pharmaceutical firms want to prevent generic firms from using this bioequivalence and would, in a sense, essentially ask generic firms to do their own clinical trials, which raises a whole lot of ethical questions that you would expose human subjects to these maybe unnecessary redundant trials that have already been approved for, you know, medical use. So there are a lot of very overt provisions in here to prevent generic competition. Another one that's very concerning is allowing customs officials to seize legally made generic drugs. This happened with drugs from India that were on their way to Africa and Brazil. They were transshipped through Rotterdam, and they were seized by customs officials because some brand name firm said, I think they might be violating our patents, even though these drugs were never going to be in the European market. It was just a transshipment process where they were going through the Rotterdam port, but the drugs were seized. And this helped to interrupt the generic supply chain where these African and Brazilian they were waiting for the drugs from India, and they weren't counterfeit drugs, and they weren't violating patents. So these provisions have been put into the TPP, again, another way to disrupt generic competition.
The Obama administration must be a bit conflicted on all this stuff, Susan, in that it's going to add a burden to the cost of your health care as well as ours.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to raise drug prices. You know, to the extent that you block generic competition and allow evergreening, that's just going to entrench these monopoly rights and cause higher health costs. And I find it extremely ironic, given that his signature policy that he wants to be known for is the affordable health care.
Yeah.
And this is runs completely counter to it, and I don't really understand why. I guess he's trying to promote the interests of what he perceives to be our most competitive and profitable industries abroad, but it's going to have real ramifications here at home.
Michael,
it will not be popular.
Sorry, Susan. Michael, is the PBS under significant threat?
I think the PBS is under significant threat under the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, there was a very kind of concerning study by Nicholas Groom and Diane Nicol that said that Australia was already paying millions of dollars extra for patent term extensions. You know, the combination of measures that have been revealed by WikiLeaks would place a great deal of stress upon drug prices in Australia and on the PBS. And really, the coalition needs to take that very seriously in terms of, you know, that will impact some of their kind of key constituents who are kind of concerned about such matters.
I'm going back to you, Susan, as a wind-up. I'm impressed with the efforts of Democrat Senator Elizabeth Warren, seen as a possible presidential nominee in 2016. She's a key opponent of the TPP. Is she having much impact on her fellows?
Well, she's very pro-consumer, which is, you know, partly why she's opposing the TPP. And some people see her as a threat to Hillary Clinton in 2016. But that's all speculation at this point. But she has a very strong, very powerful voice for consumers and those who've been shut out of the process, which is most of the rest of us who didn't have access to the secret text until WikiLeaks. But there are a number of other Congress people that are very concerned and have a lot of credibility, like Ron Wyden of Oregon. Some of these Congress people were very involved in stopping the SOPA PIPA and protesting against it. Ron Wyden was one of the main architects of legislation for safe harbors for ISPs, so he's very concerned. And the fact that they are threatening to deny Obama fast-track authority without public deliberation over these issues, I think, is very palpable.
Susan Sell from George Washington and Dr. Matthew Brimmer from the AAU, thank you very much for alerting and alarming us. Coming up after a little tiny bit of music, some of the pleasures and, as I said, perils of translation.